This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today because my major client is a religious organization, and so they do not have work tomorrow. So, it is Thursday again, and I get to spend the day tomorrow writing. Hopefully, as you can hear already, the sound has changed a bit for episode 3. I invested in some binaural in-ear microphones. We are going to see how this goes. And hopefully this will be our last change. So anyways, this last week, actually a week ago today, I had breakfast with a young man and very much enjoyed his company. I have actually known him since he was just little. His dad died when he was young, and I sort of, along with some other men, stepped in and tried to, you know, provide a father figure for him. Fine young man, great singer. He's kind of making his way now in life, trying to figure out what he wants to do with life. And so we get together every once in a while and just chat about the things of the Lord and chat about life and see where he's going. He had made a recording of the Star Spangled Banner and put it up on YouTube. And so he was saying, you need to go out and view it and rate it, because the more people he gets to rate it, I guess, you know, he ends up winning a contest or something. And I said, sure, I can do that for you. So I went out, and of course he did a great job. And while I was watching it, I glanced down to the side, and you know, YouTube has those things at the side where they show you other recommended videos, and for some reason, the recommended video beside his video was World's Strangest People. I thought, okay, well, that's pretty interesting. So I went ahead and watched that one. And there was a part 2, and I watched that one, and there was a part 3, and I watched that one, a part 4, and a part 5. And what I found really interesting about it was the visceral reaction I was having to watching these videos. They weren't things I hadn't seen before, but, you know, there are people like the people that are cutting their tongue so they have a bifurcation in their tongue, or getting tattoos to look like a lizard or look like this and the other, and those kind of things. People that were just born with certain odd genetic defects. There was the man on there that just grows warts like crazy over his hands and feet and his body, and they have to be scraped off. And you know, I'm watching all of these pictures of things, and I'm having these little visceral reactions, and I know immediately that this is from my flesh. I mean, there's just no question this is from my flesh, because at the base of it, the only real truth in this is that each of these people are beings that have the God breath within them, who are loved of God, whom Jesus died for, and Jesus wants to have a relationship with. And so, obviously, if there is something within me that's going, ew, ew, ew. Okay, obviously, that's flesh. And as I discussed that with some friends this week as we had dinners together, I said, you know, you should go and just kind of watch them and remind yourself every time you have one of these visceral reactions, this is flesh. And you should really tell it to kind of be quiet and sit down. I actually got a better example of this that I could use on the spot as the week went on a little bit, and I tried it out with a couple of people. I will grant you from the beginning that this particular reaction is going to be more potent for men than it's going to be for women, and you'll understand in a minute. I was watching, I think it was the Today Show, I think Monday morning, watching the Today Show, and there was a news report on Farrah Fawcett. And so when I was having dinner and breakfast with my friends this week, I said, so, you all remember Farrah Fawcett? And of course, the guys who are, you know, middle-aged or older now all smiled at that point. And one of the guys told me, yeah, well, I had the poster. And I said, here's a flesh reaction for you. Pay attention to the reaction within you and understand that this is your flesh. I said, I saw a news report. Farrah Fawcett has rectal cancer. And one of the guys that I was having dinner with, he kind of stopped and he looked at me. And I could tell, he's trying not to react, but finally he just kind of shook his head and put his head down. And, I said, yeah, that's a flesh reaction, man. Right there, that's a flesh reaction. So, the question is, what do we do with those reactions? I mean, we should recognize immediately that if we are suddenly withdrawn from people, if we suddenly feel uncomfortable around people, that diminishes who they really are. And who they really are is someone who is loved by Christ. So how do we combat against that? And I'd like to answer that question by taking a small detour and coming back around to it, because there's one basic answer to every time the flesh comes against you. And I'm learning that more and more. At first, when I was going through this process of learning about the flesh, I thought there was like this one answer for only certain kinds of flesh reactions, but I've learned this past week that, you know what, it just works for a lot of different things. Without going into a lot of details, for the past 2 weeks or so, my flesh has just been pounding me over an issue. And I knew that I was proceeding in the right way, but that didn't stop the flesh from pounding me about it. And I was starting to talk to my friends about it, and Tuesday morning I get together with a couple of guys, and I was telling them, I said, yeah, the flesh is just pounding me on this. It has been for like 2 weeks, my neck is tight, I'm tense, I've got stress. And one of my buddies asked the right question. He said, so how do you get the light down on those cockroaches? Because if you've read Still Whispers, I have a chapter in there, Truth That Scatters. And I talk about the fact that when the flesh is coming against you and beating you up over something, that if you get down to the beliefs that are underneath that getting beat up on, and you get some light on them, that it will scatter those beliefs like cockroaches. And the attack will just go away, the stress will just go away. And so he asked me the pointed question. He said, okay, so how do you get the light on those cockroaches? And at that point, I looked at him, I said, man, I don't know. I said, I'm not sure. But later that day, as I was going to meet another friend for dinner, I was thinking, okay, this is dumb. This is ridiculous. It is time to do something about this. And so I just started praying about the people involved in the situation. It wasn't that the people involved in the situation were condemning me or anything like that. It was that I was feeling obligated towards the situation when in fact I didn't need to feel obligated towards the situation. And so I just began praying. And I began praying for the people in the situation, that God would bless them, that He would prosper them, that He would, take their epics and move them forward and just give them a great day. And, as soon as I started doing that, as soon as I connected at that level, not in thinking about my obligations, but in praying for those people to be able to accomplish their epics, all that tension lifted. And I've had a few little twinges of it come back, but, for the most part, it is gone. And I'm thinking, hey, this praying thing works for more than just that. Which brings us back around to the Farrah Fawcett issue, which brings us back around to the world's strangest people issue. The fact of the matter is that whenever you are having one of those flesh reactions, like, ew, these people, ew, ew, the best response is to just start praying. That should be our first response. We should say something like, God, I just pray for Farrah Fawcett today. I thank you that you have placed such beauty in the world. I have no idea whether she knows you or has ever approached you, but on this day, will you send someone her way to help her? Will you send someone her way to encourage her? Send someone her way to love her? And in the process that only you know and only you can guide and direct. Draw her to yourself. Before I switch topics, I'm just going to adjust my microphone because it is popping out of my ear. It feels like it's going somewhere. Okay. Now then, on to the next topic. A couple of weeks ago, I received an email from my wife. And just in the subject line, she had Nancy Easland. Nancy Easland was married to Terry Easland. And Nancy Easland is the daughter of one of the parishioners that went to a church that my wife was music minister at for 20 years. And so I recognized the email immediately, and I opened it up while I was at work. And she said that she had just heard that Nancy Easland had died. And she sent me a link to the announcement, and so I tracked it in to see what there was. My wife actually kicked around with Nancy for a little bit when they were here in Springfield, and Nancy was pursuing a bachelor's degree. And I read through the link, and I thought, how very interesting. Because it was talking about a book that Nancy had written called The Disabled God. And there were a few things in the article that just immediately caught my attention. One of them was that Nancy said that she was quoted as saying, you got to be a little careful with articles, but this is what the article said. She was quoted as saying that she hoped that when she got to heaven, she would still be disabled. Because the challenges of her disability had so shaped her identity that she felt that if she wasn't disabled when she got to heaven, that she would be wholly unknown to herself and perhaps to God. Well, okay, that's a pretty interesting idea. The other idea that was mentioned in the article, and really was the idea that I bought her book. I went out to Amazon, bought her book, because I thought, you know what, if I'm going to talk about this, I really want to know exactly what she's saying. And surprisingly enough, the article actually had it pretty much on track. Most of the book is about how to develop a theology of the disabled and how to integrate the disabled into our worship services and those kind of things. And it's a very good book, very good book. But I was really waiting for that chapter on the disabled God. And I finally got to it, and she opens up the chapter talking about the fact that she doesn't have that many epiphanies in her life. And so when she had this epiphany, she really took notice. And the epiphany was quite simple. She had a vision of God in heaven, puttering around heaven in a sip-puff wheelchair. So the kind that quadriplegics use, where they sip on it to do one action, puff on it to do another. And that image was a profound image for her. And when I read that, I thought, yes, absolutely. Absolutely, this is the God that I know. Now, you may be saying, what? What are you talking about? But you see, this image is a profound image for Nancy. And the God that I know is not a God who simply knows about us. He's not a God who simply understands about us or empathizes with us. The God that I know is a God who becomes. See, at that moment, God had become disabled for Nancy. And in that process of becoming, she was able to identify with him in a fuller way. Out of that image, then, as she began to search the scriptures, she actually came up with some things that I think have a lot of merit. She talks in her book about communion. Actually, she calls it Eucharist, but that's fine. The Eucharist or the communion. And she talks about this process that when Christ shared the Eucharist or the communion with his disciples, he said, "This is my body broken for you. This is my blood spilled out for you." So Christ is presenting himself as broken in body and spilled out in blood. And she makes a really interesting point in that after Christ was resurrected and he was in his glorified body and nothing else was going to be done with this body, he presented himself to his disciples and he said, look, see, here's the scars from my crucifixion. Look at my side. Here's where it pierced me. And what Nancy drew from that was that Christ's suffering and the scars that were in his body were not something that needed to be changed, but they were a part of his identity. What I think is so cool about the God who becomes is the fact that God understands the struggles that we face. He knows that one of the goals of our flesh is to lay down lines inside us, to lay down boxes inside us, to lay down cages inside us. And then our flesh begins to tell us, that's why you'll always be separated from God. That's why there'll always be a piece of you that can never know him fully. And what God does, and instead of standing outside and he says, no, that doesn't have to separate you from me. No, that doesn't have to stop a full understanding of who I am. No. Instead of doing that, he becomes the God who becomes. He moves in with us, and he reveals himself to us as someone who has become us. Now that I don't want to be misunderstood, and I will say, yes, there was very much a legal requirement that Jesus fulfilled in the law and in judgment and in all of those things by being a human being, by being God with us. I'm not talking about the legal requirement in the next few minutes. I'm talking about this process of God understanding who we are, understanding what the flesh would seek to do to keep us from acknowledging and moving into who he is. Because apart from what he did on Calvary from a legal standpoint, he also did something else very, very important. He became all of our weaknesses. He became all of our iniquities. He became all of our shortcomings and our setbacks. And he became those things so that we could never say, oh, I can't know God. Because if we are confined within this cage that the flesh has built around us, all we really need to do is take a good look around, and we're going to find out that he's already in there with us. And out of that, then, we can more fully have a relationship with him. I've reached my gravel drive, so it's getting time to wrap this up. I never did tell you what the link led to that I was reading in the email. The link led to an article in the New York Times, a eulogy for Nancy Easland in the New York Times. Because you see, after she had this revelation of God, she began to discuss it with her friends. She began to investigate further. She began to think about it. And this concept of the disabled God grew into a master's thesis. And that grew into a book. And it became a life work for her. It became an epic for her to define who she was and what she could bring to this life, that if she did not do it, no one else would do it. And what is really cool about that is it all starts back with an image that God speaks into her mind that might not be the image we would first choose in our ways of thinking about God, but God in that sip puff wheelchair, that image activated something within Nancy. And out of that, it led her on this path that became her epic. I need to grab my mail a minute. And then we will finish up for today. I just love the Easter season. Wait, my mic came out. One moment. I'm going to have to do something better about this mic on this side, because it's, hopefully I've got it in the correct way. I just love the Easter season. One of the things that was really cool several years ago was we had some Romanian housekeepers that came through and cleaned the office at the client where I work. And one of them was a young lady who had done a fabulous job learning English in only about 3 months. The other one was her mom. She was this short, little, rotund Romanian lady. And, you know, she'd been through a lot of hard things in her life. And because of that, she didn't always have a smile on her face, but she was a hard worker. Well, I had actually learned enough Romanian, and this mic has popped out again, so I have no idea what this is doing to the stereo field. One moment. Sorry. Small technical issue. That's what you do when you do things live and you have no edits. Okay, anyways, so I was talking to her daughter, and somehow we got on the subject of Easter, and she actually taught me, her daughter taught me in Romanian. If you heard that sound, I just backed into a box in the garage. She actually taught me in Romanian the exchange that they would do that a lot of Christians around the world do around Easter, and that is the first person says, "He is risen." And the other person says, "Christ is risen indeed." And she taught me how to do the first phrase in Romanian, "He is risen." And so I waited, and when I had the opportunity, you know, I said this phrase in Romanian, "He is risen." And that little old Romanian woman, you know, she kind of smiled and said, "He is risen indeed," back to me in Romanian. And it was one of those cool moments. And I actually had one of those moments today because one of my users had written about a problem, and so I had taken care of it, you know, and so I thought, I wonder if she knows that phrase. So just on a lark, I wrote in, "He is risen," at the end of my email and sent it back to her. And just almost immediately, she wrote back and said, "Christ is risen indeed." I've made it home. Have a great Easter celebration.